CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Now back to Fire It Up with CJ. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com. And call CJ now.
248-545-7685.
On CBS Radio's The Sky. The Sky.
Before we go back to CJ, I want to give you her website. You can catch her past shows, new events, and all sorts of things at fireitupwithcj.com. You can also follow her on Facebook. Now back to CJ.
Hey, guys. Welcome back. I have been mesmerized. I think I've been hypnotized by Richard Bandler, who's here hypnotizing me on air without me even recognizing it. So we were talking about Richard Bandler and his work in neuro-linguistic programming. So welcome back, Richard. Have you been hypnotizing me?
It's in my nature.
You can't help it. Okay, so you've mapped out pilots, you've mapped out salespeople, military. I mean, who do you still want to map out?
Oh, there's always something interesting that comes along. I mean, to me, it's oddly enough, from everybody I meet, I learn a little something. You know, everybody thinks a little differently, and, you know, I did a thing with actors one time, and I found out how they memorize scripts, and then I taught children to use it for memorizing other things. You know, it's, you take a little bit here and you put it over there. You know, there's not a whole lot of difference between an interior decorator and a schizophrenic, other than the fact that the interior decorator goes out and buys the furniture and builds it, and the schizophrenic lives with it without it being there. You know, to me, you know, there's, when you define people as being crazy or being schizophrenic or being depressed, as opposed to looking at these behaviors as what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And to me, one of the big changes was that I started looking at this not as something that was wrong with somebody, but just what they were doing. That somebody was unhappy because they were thinking a certain way. Somebody was depressed because they were thinking a certain way. And, you know, whether somebody has big fears or big self-doubts or somebody is got the determination to get through very difficult things. I recently released a book called The Ultimate Introduction to NLP.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it is it's a story about somebody going to a three-day seminar. And when we put on big seminars and there are hundreds of people, you know, sometimes thousands, and they go for 3 days, we present them enough information about controlling their thoughts that it's very life-changing for people. And one of the big learnings is that, you know, that you're not a byproduct of your past. When people go, where did my problems come from? I tell them birth. It caused everything. Had you not been born, you wouldn't have these difficulties. But you also wouldn't have the magic moments that are available.
Mm-hmm.
And the trick is to have more good moments than bad ones. And when, you know, when people are manic depressive, the doctors say, oh, you've got a chemical imbalance. Well, yeah, but so do great artists and great musicians and great people who write poetry. And, you know, it's not always that it has to be suffering. You know, if you adjust your thoughts, it adjusts your body chemistry.
Okay,
go to a doctor and have their body chemistry adjusted in another way. But you should always try to augment it, because it amazes me that even on TV, they're pushing antidepressants, and then they're pushing pills that, if your antidepressants aren't working, will make them work better. So you have antidepressants for your antidepressants. And to me, you know, that being happy is a skill. It's not a byproduct of being born with the right parents and having the right circumstances. It's something that you learn to do. And I wrote a book called The Secrets of Being Happy because I wanted people to realize happy people are people with a purpose. You know, they come up with something to do that fulfills their life. And, you know, sometimes we look at people like this as being driven, but they don't. They do it because they enjoy it. And there's like a list of things, a very simple list. People who have a lot more friends and families and people who, you know, it's like I found out that having high self-esteem isn't very difficult. All you have to do is the right thing for the right reason. And most people know what that is. Everybody knows that stealing is bad, but yet people do it anyway because they get a thrill from it, but they don't end up feeling good about themselves. Whereas if you do the right thing for the right reasons, if somebody drops an orange and you pick it up because they have a bag of groceries, if you pick it up so other people will see you, you don't get to feel good. But if you pick it up because it's the right thing to do, you get to feel good about yourself. It's not complicated to have high self-esteem. But yet, when I worked in the school system, they were saying kids couldn't spell and couldn't read because they had self-esteem problems because they had bad families. Well, you know, I grew up in a very unpleasant environment. And, you know, you can be happy anyway. People survived prisoner of war camps and came out happy people. It's just that you have to think about it properly. And learning to do these things and learning from the people that have done it. So when I look for people who are happy, I looked for people who are happy in the worst of situations and found out they all had things in common. When I wrote the book, The Ultimate Introduction, I wanted to present a story that people could read, that they could just read it like they were reading a short novel and have the same experience as going to a seminar. Mm-hmm. And come out of it learning how to think differently, learning how to change the volume of the voice in their head, and whether it's on the right or the left, having some kind of controls. I mean, good heavens, if we didn't have controls on our ovens, we wouldn't be able to cook. If we don't have controls on our TV, if you don't like what you're watching, you can change the channel. Mm-hmm. And yet most people have no control over how they're thinking or what they're doing.
So the Ultimate Intro to NLP, which I've read, is a really fast read. And in fact, it does exactly what you said, of course. But it's like going to what I felt as a reader is I felt like I was walking through the experience with the gentleman who had gone to the seminar, and I was hearing your words and then how they affected him, and I really did feel like I was going to, you know, of course I'm not going to get the full benefit of going to your seminar, but as much as you can through a book.
There's a difference between spending a couple of $1,000 and But I think it's a good read, and it gives people a window into something that allows them to be able to think differently.
Yeah. So I want to go back to the comment you made about the kids and having a healthy self-esteem. So, I mean, how do you think that people can do that for their children?
Well, if you know how people spell, because the truth is, when I went into the school systems and they gave me kids, they said, well, we're going to send you over to talk to the educational handicapped teacher, which was a good name for her. And it was even written on her door. And when you see on the door, educationally handicapped counselor. And I walked in, and she started telling me, you know, I said, I want the five worst kids in the school, kids that you think cannot be helped. And she pulled out the file, and she told me one of them was cross-hemisphered. And I said, are you telling me that the right hemisphere is actually on the left? That would just make them left-handed, wouldn't it? And she said, no. She said, I said, have you taken x-rays? And she went, no, it has nothing to do with x-rays. We give them a diagnostic test. And these are fifth graders, and they're giving them diagnostic tests and identifying it as a pathology. And when I said, what can't they do that makes them handicapped? And they started going down the list. They go, well, they're not spelling at a fifth grade level. They're spelling at a kindergarten level. And so I went out and found the person that won the spelling bee in California. And it was a smart little young, you know, 9-year-old girl, and found out. I said, how do you spell words? And she said, what word? And I said, how about the word phenomenological? And she started barking out letters. And I said, no. I said, don't tell me what letters are in the word. How do you know which letters to tell me? And she said, well, I can see them in my mind. And I said, how big are they? And she held her hands, and it was about 10 inches in size. And she pointed to each letter, and she could read them forwards and backwards. And what she did is looked at a word when it was written down or typed and put this big thing up in her mind and memorize it and then look away and say the word and put the word back and then make sure it was the same as the one on the paper. Hmm. And so I taught kids to make this big picture thing in their head. And in fact, I told them it was how you cheated. And when I took all five of these kids and had them make 12-inch letters in their head, in fact, I wrote them on what we used to call a blackboard, but I wrote them with different colored chalk. And I wrote up all the words they were supposed to spell, and I wrote them in different colors, and I wrote them 10 inches big, and I had them memorize them as 10 inches high. And then I asked them, like in the word color, I'd go, what color is the letter L? And if they told me it was blue, then I knew they had an eidetic image instead of because what you do is you construct images with one hemisphere, you memorize them with the other.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get people to construct big pictures of words as a habit, they do it automatically.
Mm-hmm.
In my seminars, I teach adults to do this to memorize names so that they connect the face itself with a caricature and then write a name underneath it and then read the name and check to make sure it's correct. See, our ability to input data, how we encode data, is directly related to how we decode it. And if it's not encoded properly, it's hard to recall it.
Mm-hmm.
And teaching children to do that. I just put out an audio tape, which is about addition, because I find the way they teach addition to be ridiculous, because most people can add and multiply up to 10, and then it stops. Because I don't know why, because multiplying, you know, two bigger numbers together wasn't something. They didn't really learn to multiply.
No, it's how
they
we were taught to do it.
Tensies.
Yeah.
If you teach people properly, then what happens is they build a machine in their head that produces the result.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether that result is being happy or whether that result is being determined or whether that result is spelling. And I find that once you teach kids to succeed at tasks, then they feel good about themselves anyway.
Right.
And instead of trying to get them to feel good because there's no failure in the system.
Interesting. So my grandson was
telling me that, you know, that at school that they, you know, they don't keep score, they don't get grades, they don't do anything. So how do you know if you're doing things correct?
Yeah, we have Richard Brandler. We are going to be right back. We have to go to break.
Okay.